Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling case number 83999, Sislak v. Polymer 80, Incorporated. Counsel, you ready to proceed?
All right.
Good morning. Keel Ireland on behalf of the state. May it please the court. A fundamental principle in this court's standing doctrine is that a plaintiff cannot assert someone else's potential legal problem as their own claim. This court has applied that principle in the void for vagueness context by repeatedly holding that a plaintiff whose own conduct is, quote, clearly proscribed, end quote, by a statute cannot challenge the statute as potentially vague as to someone else's conduct.
Hold on a second. Can you stop the clock, Elizabeth?
What? Is that feedback?
Yeah. We were... Okay. Sorry, go ahead and start. I apologize. Sorry, just cheap.
Polymer 80 makes kits that include frames or receivers that are 80% complete, far past the line established by AB 286. This court should reverse the decision below because Polymer 80 lacked standing. If this court reaches the merits, it should still reverse. AB 286's definition of unfinished frame or receiver contains straightforward words with well-settled meanings. A statute does not need to be a Russian nesting doll, with each definitional section having its own set of definitional subsections. So to dig into those two arguments a little more, first on standing, Polymer 80's buy, build, shoot kits are clearly proscribed by AB 286. The record shows that Polymer 80's kits are intended to be completed by the buyer in less than an hour using home tools. There is no dispute that most of the major machining operations have been completed by the time the kit gets to the consumer. Polymer 80 argues that it has standing because it is harmed by AB 286. But while harm is necessary to establish standing, it is not sufficient. For example, in this court's Shu decision, the appellant had been convicted of a crime, which is the most serious type of harm possible. But this court rejected his vagueness challenge without reaching the merits because the criminal defendant's conduct was clearly proscribed under the statutes. That is a specific application of the general principle articulated in Ellie against Stevens that a plaintiff cannot assert someone else's potential legal problem as their own. Polymer 80 cannot assert that AB 286 is vague as to someone else's potential conduct when its own conduct is clearly prescribed.
Counsel, aren't they making a facial challenge rather than an as-applied challenge? And if so, how does that affect your standing argument?
Yes, but this standing argument has been applied to facial challenges in the past. We have several...
In Nevada?
In Nevada. I'm not sure in Nevada. It's certainly in other states and in the federal system. And I think it still goes to the point that there is not a concrete justiciable controversy between the parties before this court. This court just recently in the Namik decision 2 weeks ago recognized that standing is a constitutional doctrine that limits this court's jurisdiction under the separation of powers clause. And so this court lacks jurisdiction to resolve this dispute if Polymer 80 does not have standing to bring it.
Well, don't they have standing because the statute, I mean, arguably if the statute isn't vague, then it may be directed at Polymer 80? Doesn't that, like, it's not like they're a stranger to the issue about the enforcement of the statute.
That's true, Your Honor. I think it's very similar to this court's Ellie decision, where the plaintiffs had clearly been harmed by the statute there. It was a statute of repose that they claimed was discriminatory against certain groups, but not against them. So if the statute of repose was unconstitutional, it would have benefited the plaintiffs because then it wouldn't have affected them. But because their complaint about the statute was someone else's problem, they couldn't bring that specific claim. And I think that's analogous here where certainly Polymer 80 is harmed by the statute. No one disputes that. That's one reason why we say that their conduct is clearly prescribed by the statute. But it's someone else's claim to bring because their products are so far past the line.
But if their whole argument is that the statute is vague. So if you're saying the statute clearly applies to them, and they're saying, well, the statute is vague in its meaning, then I guess maybe they would say it's not clearly applied to them.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think where their argument of vagueness mostly, so they claim that certain terms in the statute, like blank and casting, are vague. And if this court agrees with them, then yes, I think it is vague as to them too, because those words apply to everyone. I don't personally think that's a strong argument at all. They themselves use those words regularly in their communications with regulators. Where I think it's a closer call is the major machining operations. And there, like I said earlier, because by the time the Polymer 80 kits get to the consumer, all that is left to be done is about an hour of work with home tools. Their major machining operations have been completed. Where it becomes a closer question and where someone might have standing is if it was earlier in the process where there were still some machining operations that, let's say, required industrial tools that aren't available to home consumers to be done. That a person in that situation could have standing, but not Polymer 80 based on their particular business. And just to
Mr. Ireland, if I might, this is Justice Herndon in Las Vegas. I have a question. Earlier in your argument, in the beginning, you referenced that Polymer 80's kits are 80% complete and that that is far beyond the standard established by the statute. What is the standard established by the statute? To my reading, it references the need for additional machining, quote unquote, and most of the major machining operations have been completed. How is somebody to look at that enforcement-wise or starting a business-wise? Just how is somebody supposed to look at that and know exactly what it is that they're supposed to comply with or not?
Well, most, I think, we probably all would agree means the majority. So while it might be a little strange to apply percentages to an industrial process like this, 80% receiver is something commonly used in Polymer 80's industry. It's where the 80 in Polymer 80 comes from, and 80 is far beyond 50. As far as major machining operations, that would probably be a fact for a jury to determine if the statute was enforced. And in that way, I don't think it's any different than a statute that criminalizes material misrepresentations or the attempt statute in Nevada that criminalizes or requires a finding of an overt act. There might be edge cases where it's difficult to determine whether a particular action is a major machining operation or a non-major machining operation. But in either case, the mere fact that there are fact questions does not render the statute vague. What's important is that someone who looks at this statute knows that if they go along this path, if they take a piece of raw metal or polymer and they start applying industrial tools to it, performing big operations that a home consumer can't do, then they are risking crossing the line. And that's all that the vagueness standard requires. It requires, as the U.S. Supreme Court said in the Colden decision, it's a rough idea of justice. Fair warning that if you go down this path, you might be getting into criminal sanctions. But we don't, before the fact, ex ante, have to know exactly where the line is.
Don't you think, though, that this kind of language that the legislature used here would allow for a lot of implicit bias and arbitrary enforcement by people kind of trying to figure out or applying their own definition of what most means in terms of individuals that they may have feelings about?
No, Your Honor. I don't think that is a concern here any more than in the examples that I said before as far as a material misrepresentation or any time material is used in the law. That is a judgment call by both the law enforcement agency and by the jury. And we accept that the legislature has to use general terms like that because of the infinite variety of human behavior. But what I think separates this case from some of the earlier cases where this court has invalidated statutes for vagueness is that here we have a discrete system. So let's say when we create a unfinished receiver of an AR-15 style weapon, you have a block of raw polymer or raw metal on one end, and then you have the completed firearm on the other. And there are certain steps that you go through to get from one end to the other. And so a third party can look at that, and they can see every step and break it down into major and not major in a way where, for example, It's impossible to know what exactly manifesting an intent to break the law looks like because there's an infinite variety of ways that could come up. In this, it's a very discrete closed system that makes it a lot easier for both enforcers and juries to determine and for those who are interested in this area to know roughly what is prescribed.
Would you agree, this is Justice Pickering in Las Vegas, that the standard, though, in this arena, setting aside your standing challenge, is how an ordinary person would read this statute?
Yes, Your Honor, but I think that it's important to note that an ordinary person would also, this court has said, for example, in Ransdell, that other definable sources can give clarity to a statute. So, for example, dictionary definitions. It's not a pop quiz test where we would ask a person on the street, what is a blank? I didn't know what a blank was before coming into this case, but I can look in a dictionary and I can see what it means in the metallurgical context, which is what we're talking about here.
Right. Let me clarify. I was looking at our Silverwing decision, which you cite in the reply, and you don't cite it for the proposition that trade usage can inform a criminal statute. And I just wanted to be clear that you are not contending that because Polymer knows and is expert in this, their knowledge should govern our interpretation of this statute, setting aside your standing argument.
Yes, Your Honor. It is an objective standard that does not turn solely on what Polymer 80, what words they use. But I think what's important about their communications with regulators is it shows that these terms have well-settled meanings. They would not write to the ATF saying we're selling blanks if blank could mean a lot of different things. It has to mean one thing for the communication to make sense. And so that's why we point to those communications.
So do you think that the Ninth Circuit modified test is appropriate for us to apply here?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure what test you're referring to.
So if for the first prong of the vagueness analysis, if it fails to provide notice of sufficient to enable persons of ordinary intelligence to understand that conduct, in the Ninth Circuit, they've adopted a modified test for that first prong. In the case of statutes targeting a specific group of people with specialized knowledge. And so then there's a modified test that's applied. So while I may not understand what all these terms mean, Polymer 80 and other manufacturers should, just as the layperson may not understand what tort means, but as lawyers, we all know what tort means. It's a very common term. So is that what you're asking us to do here?
Yes, Your Honor, that is part of our argument. I think that certainly you don't need to adopt that test to look at what words Polymer 80 uses and to see that these words have well-settled meanings. At the same time, as directed to Polymer 80, they know better than anyone what a major machining operation is, and so they certainly do have fair warning. And again, their whole business is designing 80% receivers, so they are very good at quantifying how complete a receiver is. And if there's no further questions at this time, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel.
May it please the court, Brad Johnston on behalf of the respondent, Polymer 80, Inc. I'd like to pick up first on a question that Justice Lee just posed about a modified test. Let's be clear, AB 286 is not directed simply at manufacturers of whatever an unfinished frame or receiver may be. It's directed at anyone who may possess one or transfer one. It is not directed simply at businesses or people engaged in business. So a modified test should not be adopted in this case because the statute goes much broader than that. Additionally, I heard repeatedly that we should leave it to judges and juries to protect people charged with crimes if the statute is unconstitutionally vague. In Scott versus First Judicial District Court, 131 Nevada 1015, this court rejected that proposition. Where a criminal statute is void for vagueness on its face, we do not save it by saying we'll let jurors figure it out later and that will protect defendants, because we're still susceptible to the average Nevada not knowing what is or is not criminal.
Mr. Johnston,
yes.
Is it your client's position that the federal act is unconstitutionally vague? They've designed their business model to comply with the federal act, right?
I think there's evidence in the record that, yes, they are complying with the Federal Gun Control Act. And certainly AB 286 tried to criminalize that which federal law does not.
Right.
So the question is, where, and as I try to decipher AB 286, somewhere between raw material and the application of federal law, AB 286 imposes criminal penalties. The question is, where in that continuum of manufacturing does it apply?
Well, if your client was able to evaluate the 80% standard as signified by its company name, can they not evaluate 50%?
Well, first of all, the statute doesn't use 50%. It uses most in major machining operations. It doesn't define.
What does preponderance mean?
What's that? Well, but that's not what the statute uses here. In addition, the federal context, you can reach out to the ATF under federal guidelines and get guidance as to what the federal law means and whether your product does or does not comply with the federal law. That doesn't exist in the face of AB 286. We're left to try to decipher what a blank casting and machine body are.
So are you arguing that most is a word that your client can't understand?
I'm saying that the average Nevadan can't understand what most of the major machining operations are when we don't even know what a blank casting or machined body is. And we're on this continuum of where does the law apply? And that goes both to the notice requirement and the discriminatory enforcement requirement. This court has struck down loitering statutes. It has struck down hindering a law enforcement officer because there was no guidelines by which to enforce it, but no guidelines from which a law enforcement officer could determine when an arrest could be made. There's no guidelines here as to what one particular deputy sheriff or one other particular law enforcement official may feel is a criminal act.
Well, counsel, the piece that we're talking about, the issue is if it meets a certain threshold, then it has to have a serial number on it, right? And then you have to get a background check and all those things, correct? And in fact, Polymer 80 sells serialized components.
I believe that is correct, true.
Okay. So with respect to where on the continuum, we're talking about a block or a bucket of material to a finished product. We all can agree we can figure out what finished means, correct?
I think we can understand what finished
okay.
is.
So mostly finished is where we're trying to figure out if it's too vague. So as I understand it, the item in question can be coupled with a jig kit that a person can use to machine it, and in fact, I think its build is in 30 minutes or less, or an hour or less. I mean, Lego kits take longer. So on the continuum of mostly finished, would something that has a guide and a jig kit with all the pieces and instructions on how to do it be mostly finished? I mean, you know.
I don't believe it would be, and that's not the words that the statute uses either. And there's reference to this buy, build, shoot kit where there are a number of components. And this is brought up repeatedly. Well, that appears to be covered by Section 4 of AB 286, which speaks to the assembly or causing to be assembled an unserialized firearm where there are several components in the kit.
But let's just talk about the receiver in the instance of a long gun. So the receiver.
Right.
When is a receiver mostly finished? And your position is that's not capable of being determined in a constitutional fashion.
That is not capable of being determined in a constitutional manner.
So if you got the block in the mail, would you feel like that was mostly finished with instructions?
I think it depends what I received in the mail.
Okay.
And I don't know if it would be mostly finished or not. And another question I have is if I have a blank casting or machine body is and I receive it in the mail, what can or I cannot do with it? If I take it out to my shop, when does it become illegal? And AB 286 does not tell me that.
If there was a sentence in the statute that said, mostly means more than 50% done, would that be enough?
It would be better, but I think you also need to define what a casting or machined body or a blank is.
Are those commonly used terms in the industry, commonly understood by your client and others that manufacture these parts?
They may be used, I don't believe so, but not in the context as they're used in AB 286, because they're not defined.
As the context in which you used it, your client used it in letters to the ATF.
I think it is irrelevant in this case.
It's part of the record. So my question is, when your client used terms like blank or those terms in its conversations with the ATF, was there a concern that the ATF wouldn't know what you were talking about? Or, I mean, are these terms that are, it doesn't hinge on this. Are these terms that people understand?
In the context of the federal firearms law, these terms may have meaning. But we did, the Nevada legislature did not decide to incorporate federal law into AB 286. It did so only with respect to certain definitions and certain terms. And this court in Gallegos said, when the Nevada legislature adopts certain terms from federal law, not others, we're not going to imply and bring wholesale over the federal law, because the conclusion is that the legislature chose not to. More important,
Mr. Johnson, Justice Pickering had mentioned Silver Wing Development, and the whole concept there in that case was that subdivision site had a common meaning in statutes, regulations, ordinances relating to planning and zoning in a broader sense. Address that.
Well, I don't believe that applies here, because this, we're talking about a criminal statute. We're talking about a facial challenge to it, and then an objective standard as to, can the average Nevadan understand what AB 286 criminalizes? And the response to that is no. Then the second prong is it subjected to discriminatory enforcement? And it fails under the second prong as well.
Give an example of that.
Yeah.
The second prong.
The discriminatory enforcement?
Yeah, certainly. How do you think that might play out?
I'll give an example. I was told, let's say whatever a blank or casting or machine body is, I get it in the mail. I take it into my shop. I have three law enforcement officers there, and let's say I begin to work on it. I would say they would come to three different conclusions as to if it ever became a criminal item to possess. And that leads to the discriminatory enforcement, which is, this court is saying, there needs to be guidelines and sufficient guidelines. And importantly,
Mr. Johnson, may I interrupt you for a moment? This is Justice Herndon.
Yes.
Mr. Ireland made the representation during his argument that there are clearly defined steps that go through taking this from raw material and turning it into a workable firearm, if you will. Would you agree with that?
I don't know if there are clearly defined steps or not, because I've never done it myself, and that was not developed in the record. And they still cannot identify a single product from Polymer 80 that qualifies as an unfinished frame or receiver under AB 286.
Well, I guess here's my point. If there are, let's assume that Mr. Ireland's right and there are clearly defined steps. You go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, to produce this from what it is in a kit to making it into a firearm. Would it not seem appropriate that the legislature could define which of those steps would be necessary to get to a point to make it illegal?
I think the legislature could have done a much better job in drafting this statute to define this. But again, we're talking about from raw product to firearm, as Justice Herndon just asked. AB 286, and what we're talking about in this case, is not going from raw material to a firearm. We're talking about raw material to an unfinished frame or receiver that does not meet the definition of firearm. And nobody can tell where on this manufacturing continuum that occurs.
I'm sorry, I'm a little confused by that, because I thought that you said previously that we could all know when something was finished, right? It's a finished product that can be assembled and used and assembled into a firearm without additional machining, correct?
I think you can understand what a finished frame or receiver is, but not an unfinished frame or receiver under AB 286's definition.
If we know what finished is, isn't anything that's not finished unfinished?
No, not according to the definition of AB 286, because it's somewhere between the raw material, the blank, the casting, or the machine body, and reaching some point in time. It's not anything that's unfinished. It's something prior to being finished, but somewhere where it's advanced and had some machining. And I would note this court specifically rejected the idea of this majority-type language, and it came up after I read the reply brief, and they continued to focus on this clearly proscribed. The clearly proscribed standard does not apply in the standard on the issue of standing. That's set forth in the Flamingo case. But in Sheriff of Washoe County v. Burge, 118 Nevada 853, 59 Pacific 3rd 484, this issue of clearly proscribed conduct came up. And the statute in that case says you're guilty of a crime if you possess the majority of the ingredients to produce a controlled substance. In that case, the defendant was arrested when found to have chemicals, a bio sheet, numerous things that were indicative of manufacturing a controlled substance, and in particular methamphetamine. And this court, even in that context, struck the statute down as unconstitutionally vague because they said, what's the majority of the ingredients? Now, majority is easier defined than major or most, but even then they said, well, what are the ingredients? Where is the line? Even though it was arguable that the defendant's conduct in that case was clearly prescribed, and that was an as-applied challenge rather than a pre-enforcement facial challenge, and this court said it failed to deprive people of ordinary intelligence what was criminal and would lead to discriminatory enforcement. If a statute, as the one in Burge, is unconstitutionally vague when it says if you possess the majority of the ingredients needed to possess methamphetamine cannot survive constitutional scrutiny, then the definition of unfinished frame or receiver in AB 286 cannot survive constitutional scrutiny. And I would note, too, this court noted in Burge, we recognize that the evil that NRS 453.322 addresses in terms of manufacturing controlled substance. But okay. That evil was
I want to come back to this particular statute for a minute, just because I'm looking at the time. We're not talking about a block of metal. The statute's not, because it gives more guidance than that. It's a blank casting or machine body, terms that are understood, that somebody's intending to turn into a lower receiver of a firearm. It's been machined to a point at which most of the major operations have been completed to turn the blank casting or machine body into a frame or lower receiver. I could go on. So we're not talking about somebody on this end of the spectrum. Question is somebody who, and not talking about somebody walking down the street, somebody who's trying to take something and turn it into a receiver for a firearm. Is that right? Is that who this applies to?
Well,
because you have to intend to turn it into a firearm.
No, the intent does not apply to the person who possesses it, because the crime is possession of an unfinished frame or receiver. The possession, that statute, section 3 and 3.5, it's possession or sale of an unfinished frame or receiver. The defendant does not have to have the intent to turn it into anything. They just simply have to possess it. So if I receive...
intent is part of the unfinished frame or receiver definition.
But it's not in the definition of the crime.
But the definition of the crime uses unfinished frame or receiver.
But I don't have to possess an unfinished frame or receiver with the intent to turn it into something. I just only have to possess it. And that's the crime, and therefore the intent in the definition does not create some sort of scienter element in the actual crime itself.
The defendant's intention, then.
Correct. It's somebody else's intent. It could be the manufacturer's intent that it could be turned into somebody else, something else.
All right, thank you.
My time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel?
Thank you, and I just want to touch on that point just to try to clarify at least our position for the court. So it's true that it does not have to be the intent of the person manufacturing the unfinished frame or receiver. So, for example, polymer 80, to my understanding, is generally they don't intend to finish it. They intend to sell the ghost gun kit to someone else who will finish it. But what's important is the item has to be intended to be turned into a firearm when it's sold or possessed or at the end of the line. Yes, Your Honor?
No, please continue. I thought you were done.
One last point on that. So if someone was bought a piece of metal that had some of the similar proportions, but let's say it was intended to be turned into a BB gun, that would not be an unfinished frame or receiver under the statute. That would be innocent conduct.
I want to follow up on this intent point, though, because it troubles me as to the second prong on the vagueness inquiry, which is just arbitrary or unfair enforcement of a statute. With the intent amorphous as to who it is, whose intent it is that this is going to be turned into it, doesn't that kind of invite that if you're in possession of one piece of this kit, that if they think you're like a bad guy, they might think that you knew what it was and intended all along to turn it into something bad, whereas if you're not somebody that the enforcement officers thought was a bad guy, you might get a wider grace in the interpretation of this statute. That troubled me when I read it, and I'd like your comments on it.
Yes, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I think that the intent requirement helps support the case that it's not vague, and that's what this court said in Ford against State, that an intent requirement can help stop arbitrary enforcement because it's an extra burden on law enforcement, and especially on the prosecution, to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the criminal defendant knew what this item was, that they didn't stumble upon it and didn't had no idea, that they actually knew what it was supposed to be turned into eventually.
So you do read it as applying to the defendant who's charged? Chief, may he answer?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so our reading of it is that there explicitly the item has to be intended eventually be turned into an unfinished frame or receiver by someone. We also, in our brief...
But anyone? Anyone at all? I mean, because I don't think it's necessarily the defendant's intent. It could be the people the defendant associates with.
I agree, or it could be the customers of the defendant. But we also read into the statute, and this is discussed in our briefs, an implied intent, specific intent requirement, which is that the person charged, whether it be a company who's manufacturing it or a person who bought it, had knowledge, is shown beyond a reasonable doubt to have knowledge of what that item was intended to do. So for someone like Polymer 80, that would be very easy to show, but for an individual, unless they bought it, and sorry, I know I'm well beyond my time, but just to make a quick point, there's pictures of these Polymer 80 kits in the record, for example, at 2JA456, and I think in the mine run case, it would be very easy to show knowledge because they basically look like finished guns. They just need a couple more steps and then they're there.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, we will, this case is submitted.